Oh, look at that. You made it back for another dose of Common Sense Ohio. It is, we just turned into August. Wow.
I sympathize for the children of Ohio that, you know, like summer is coming to an end.
Yeah.
And, you know, the poor things.
I know.
Right?
Well,
the
and then
weather
you...
has been brutal.
Exactly.
So they've been riding air conditioning sofas all summer. The weather finally starts getting nice this week, reasonably nice.
And some schools are, they're back.
And they're back.
I know.
Just like...
I know. And then, you know, and then they got the back to school shopping, the, you know, the Ohio tax free 2 weeks, and the kids are coming. 2 weeks of shopping?
Wow.
Come on.
Yeah,
but,
right.
You know, but it is what it is. But it's like, yeah.
Get me a new iPhone, Mom.
Exactly. Wow. Exactly. You know, this edition brought to you by Harper Plus CPA, Harper CPA Plus. Either way, you're going to find them. You'll see the connection in the show notes. I know I always kind of flip-flop it, but I just know it by Glenn Harper and Company, you know. So the connection, the link in the show notes, so you can find that easy enough to do. You're not going to stop your car and write this stuff down. So, but, and, you know, Steve typically rolls out some type of thing in history. I thought it was interesting yesterday, which today's the 6th of August, yesterday, August 5th. Back in 1861, President Lincoln imposed the first federal income tax by signing the Revenue Act, Stratford Cash, which during the Civil War, he put imposed a 3% tax on annual incomes over $800, which in today's terms, dollars would be about $20,000.
Okay.
Which is, I always like to do that conversion.
Yeah.
What dollars is the value of what? So yeah, he debated a lot about it, though. He wasn't all that hot on the idea. I mean, he sent letters to cabinet members Edward Bates, Gideon Welles, and Salmon Chase, getting their, you know, ideas on and opinions and such. So went through.
I assume it had to pass Congress.
Yeah, yeah, that too. So you know, so it did. It worked.
Year was that again?
That was 1861.
Okay.
And it was repealed 10 years later.
Okay.
But we implemented it back in 1909. 16th Amendment, which set in place the federal income tax system used today. It was ratified in 1913.
So that was done to finance the Union's Civil War efforts.
Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. So yeah, I thought we talk a lot about federal income tax, like, well, when did it, we never have a beginning place or when did this idea come from?
Yeah.
I thought, well, that was kind of cool that it came up yesterday in history, at least. So there you have it. You know, blame Lincoln. The idea was floated, and
but it did go away. After a while, I guess it would have been Ulysses Grant's administration probably that repealed it.
Yeah, exactly. So it did get repealed.
Yeah.
For a long time.
Because the war ended, so
yeah,
they paid off whatever
need to.
You know, they needed to and got rid of the tax.
And you know, the
now that's something our current Congress apparently never thinks about.
Oh no, once it's
is
in
repealing
play.
A federal program.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, I don't know that much history about the 16th Amendment. Why in 1909 we decided to do it again? Was it because of war? Maybe? World War I around that time? I don't know. I need to look into that.
It is a little odd, right? Because
yeah.
1906, what could have been happening? World War I was way in the future.
Yeah, so that's true. That's true. I don't know. I have to look into
maybe
that.
Maybe it was a very
why.
Small amount and only on the super wealthy.
Could have been, yeah. And
something like that.
I have to look into that because that's interesting. Why would we have it come into play? So,
yeah.
Anyway, so, you know, putting our headlines together, again, a lot of stuff that's still being discussed, and really we want to focus out to shoot the fallout of the riots in Cincinnati. Still a lot of discussion. And it's funny you made a comment about this. We were talking about this before we went on. It's funny that, you know, no one really went to DeWine first, Governor DeWine, to ask about this. We go right to Vivaswamy.
Yeah.
And senators.
Yeah.
It's just like, wow, pecking orders changed.
Yeah. So the governor of this state, he did send the state patrol to Cincinnati, or offered to augment the Cincinnati Police Department so that the CPD down there could concentrate on street crime and issues involving neighborhoods and, you know, patrolling that, while the state patrol would take over traffic duties, you know, speed enforcement and things like that around Cincinnati and Hamilton County. But other than that, I haven't heard Governor DeWine, you know, really involved in this story. And it's kind of interesting because the DeWines are very active in politics in southwestern Ohio, including Cincinnati, because some of his kids, grown, you know, children and grandchildren are residents of Cincinnati. And so you would think. But this big meeting that occurred a couple days ago, a town hall meeting organized by Vivek Ramaswamy, featured Anthony Munoz. He was the kickoff speaker for, you know, Hall of Famer for the Cincinnati Bengals. They had Corey Bowman, who is J.D. Vance's brother, running for mayor. He's a pastor and, you know, a citizen of Cincinnati, wants to become mayor to replace the current mayor, Aftab Perival, the current mayor. And then they had a bunch of other speakers. One that really caught my attention is Sarah Herringer. Her and her husband owned a gym in the Over the Rhine, which is a gentrified area, former slum in Cincinnati. Used to, you know, years and years ago, it was where a lot of the German migrants settled in Cincinnati. Then as they gathered wealth and became successful, they then moved to the suburbs, and the inner city started to deteriorate, and the Over the Rhine became a slum. Famously featured in the movie Traffic with Michael Douglas, a lot of Over the Rhine footage in that movie. And then people looked at their map of downtown and realized, my goodness, if we do any kind of development in Cincinnati, the Over the Rhine is perfect. Mm-hmm. So that's when they put in the casino.
Yeah.
Is in the Over the Rhine. And there's,
which always attracts the best of the best, by the way.
Right. It always does.
Always does.
Right. So they then, you know, a bunch of places like this gym, bakeries, all kinds of little mom and pop businesses started to pop up in the Over the Rhine, microbrews and all kinds of things. Anyway, this lady, Sarah Herringer, her husband and her were in their Over the Rhine home, I guess, in the same vicinity as their gym. And somebody broke in and stabbed him to death. And this happened in June. So there seems to be a crime wave of various kinds. And I mean, I can talk about personal experiences involving friends of mine down there and my own family that's down there. And there's just a lot of these stories of random, seemingly random violence that you can't explain. You know, people, you know, like homeless or drunk people going into a restaurant and just throwing chairs airborne at diners and, you know, slashing people's faces open, you know, diners sitting at their table. And some guy just walks in and starts throwing chairs around with no targeted reason. And so there's been a number of these, like from behind, I forget what they call that, but where you clock somebody, they don't even know they're about to get hit. And, you know, you whack them from behind. And some people say that's a gang initiation, right? Mm. And so there's these stories and people are just like, wow, that's not the Cincinnati I grew up in. Where, sure, there were always some problems, but I don't remember anything like what's going on down there. And certainly not this seemingly race-based fight that happened. It turned into a riot. I've never heard of anything like that in all the years, you know, that I lived there. And I'm sure there were, but it just, like, it might have happened so long ago that, like, it became legend. But this is all recent stuff, and you do wonder if our culture is sliding, and I think a lot of people feel it has. One of the council persons in Cincinnati, Victoria Parks, gave her thoughts on this, and she said the victims, and I quote her, were begging for the beatdown, unquote. And I even... even her fellow Democrats said, no. You can't say something like that. That's outrageous. So she's really like out there on the extreme. And I would not want to take my Democratic friends and wrap their opinions with hers. I think that's unfair.
Yeah.
In the same way that I would not view this through a purely racial lens. I think there's a racial element to that. And I think it speaks to a sense of desperation, perhaps, in Cincinnati, maybe by people who live downtown, maybe by the minority population, maybe, you know, feeling still that racial injustice is not being addressed correctly. I don't know. It probably varies person to person. But you certainly can't say something like victims are begging for a beatdown, because that seems to sanction the mob violence. So some of the other speakers included Corey Bowman, again, who's running for mayor. I think going back to Brett's opening here on Vivek, it's incredible to me that the Republican Party, and this is not to criticize Vivek. I mean, he ran a really strong effort to clear the field of any competition. Yeah. But like Dave Yost, who should be in this governor's race, like he is a voice that Ohio needs to hear from the Republican side. He bowed out because President Trump and all the big donors, everybody got behind Vivek more than a year out from the primary, not to mention the general election, which is next year. So Vivek has like, I don't know what it is, like 15 months before the election where he's running for governor. So the reporters are going to him as if he's already governor and asking him, you know, to enter into these controversies in Ohio, and he is responding, and I think some of his comments at this town hall were really good, you know. But be that as it may, it's interesting they didn't go to Governor DeWine.
Yeah, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You know, while you were talking, I was thinking about this situation of is there a loss of community feel in that area, and are we talking and asking the right questions of the right people? And in my mind, I'm thinking you go to the police who patrol that area and talk to them about what is going on.
Yeah,
they're there every day.
Yeah,
and get their point of view about what's missing here. Why are kids doing what they're doing?
I think part of what is missing, just to jump in real quick with a factoid, is Senator Bernie Marino has highlighted. And I'm sure the Cincinnati FOP and the Cincinnati Police Union are all over this. They are down something like 300 to 400 officers right now, just like Columbus.
Yeah.
Columbus is down somewhere around, I think the last time I heard from our friend Stephen Walter was we're down like 400.
Yeah. So, I mean,
that's part of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have people on the street.
There are lots of little pieces here. And also talking to the police, feet on the street, about what are you seeing? What are the community members talking about? What are their problems?
Yeah.
Why is this happening? Because I think you're going to get a straight answer, lots of different points of view, but you're getting it from the community. So you get that community buy-in that they're helping fix the problem as well too, versus outsiders, which is basically many of those people that they're at this table, talking about the problem. Well, people are living in that community going, well, Vivek knows nothing about it. He doesn't live here. That person doesn't know anything. They don't live here. We need to hear from that community about what the problem is. They may have the solution.
Or parts
of it, and work with them, because it's got to come from grassroots up.
Well, I think, you know, your comment.
Some of it, pieces of it. People that are just throwing
lightning bolts, you know, to amp up, you know, the controversy are not helpful.
No.
Okay.
No.
But I think to sort of soften that point of view. Mm-hmm. The idea of a town hall for people to come, and I think they had room for 300, and some people who were not defending the riot but trying to explain the psychology behind it.
The temperature of the room.
The temperature. Right. They did show up. Yeah. And one gentleman got into a debate with Vivek, African-American gentleman, that said, and I would disagree with this, but this is what he said. So his feelings are legitimate. I mean, if he feels these things, it's legitimate for him to explain them, even if I disagree with the philosophy. But he said, quote, I'm paraphrasing, but basically, quote, our people, meaning black folks in Cincinnati, our people have been put down, discriminated against, have been marginalized for 400 years. And this is what he said, 400 years. And so you have to understand the anger in the community. And I would say, and I think Vivek, and he and Vivek had a back and forth a little bit, and then they went on to other people who were there that wanted to talk. But I think that kind of idea, right, that there is prejudice against a group at large. Let's suppose everything he said is true. Because from his point of view, he feels that way. Mm-hmm. So let's give him his due and say, okay, you're angry as a community because you're thinking back of this heritage of slavery and the Underground Railroad that went through Cincinnati and all of this stuff, the civil rights issues and having to pass a Voter Rights Act to make sure that blacks have the franchise to vote, all of this stuff, right? And to look back on that and to retain anger and then to say that somehow explains, almost killing two people, right? By kicking them in the head and sucker punching them from behind. I think his feelings very well could be legitimately discussed and should be. Because if people have those feelings, let's not hide that. Let's get it out in the open. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about the history of America, the 1619 Project, and all the other BLM, Antifa things. That's all grist for the mill. Let's talk about it. That is what we should be doing, is talking about those issues. But I think to say that there's this pent-up rage that somehow can explain how a mob would just go over the top. And I don't care whether it's a Ku Klux Klan mob or a black mob or a sports mob or a January 6th mob or whatever kind of mob it is wrong to it's wrong to act on the basis of rage and damn near kill people. Let's take the worst thing that could happen to a parent. As as an example, since we don't have Steve here, I remember a case of where a father's daughter was murdered by, one of these predators. Okay. This guy was in court for sentencing and the dad came in with a gun into the courtroom. Now this guy killed his daughter. The jury found him guilty. He's there for sentencing. And I remember this guy, it was a clip, you could probably find it. He had a baseball cap on. He had a gun. He walked into the courtroom and he shot that guy dead right in the courtroom. Okay. Now, what could be worse, right, than somebody murdering your child? There's nothing, I can't think of anything worse, right, that could happen to you. And yet, that guy had to be prosecuted. You can't, the worst thing in the world can happen to you, and you can't go and get revenge against somebody when they're no longer or never were a threat to you, and you're not in fear for your life. You just went in and assassinated this guy in a courtroom. So I don't care what the mob thinks that they heard or what they were told or what the gossip was, that this guy maybe said something racial or maybe he slapped somebody in the face. Hey, folks, that is no justification. It's no justification that he's white and you're black. Okay. That's where this council person, Victoria Parks, she should be a leader in the community. Like other blacks are being leaders down there and saying, you know, at churches, and other council people are saying, no. Listen, you can't, violence is never the answer, right? The only time you can defend yourself is when you're fearful legitimately for your own life, right? And as soon as that threat is diminished or goes away, you're not allowed to do anything to the other person. You know, if a guy is breaking into your home, you send a shotgun round through the ceiling and he's on his way out the window out of your house, you're not allowed to run out in the yard and then kill him.
All right. Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what people think the laws are, but there is no justification for a beatdown when there is no threat and the guy's laying on the ground.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people have to understand what the law is. And then we can have these town meetings with Vivek or whoever, you know. And Governor DeWine, frankly, should be going down there and doing a town meeting. Okay.
Yeah, that's interesting that he's not. You're right. I mean, because
he's governor.
Right, exactly.
My God.
And he's got a whole other year. And I mean, mm-hmm. You know, plenty of time to encourage legislation or whatever the case might be.
Right.
I mean, I don't know what the answer is, but
right.
It's one of those. But talking about the town halls and such, or the initial one, there need to be more of them. And hopefully, you know, we hear and see, probably not though, because usually the first one with all the star power is there.
Yeah.
Hopefully they have more and they continue the talk.
They absolutely should.
They have to.
Look what they did in South Africa after apartheid. Bishop Desmond Tutu, right? The Episcopal bishop of South Africa, black man, right? Won the Nobel Peace Prize. He held these reconciliation panels. And anybody could come in under the protection of the laws that they passed, confess to a race-based crime, whether they were black or white. You know, like, you know, I'm a former police officer and I want to confess. We went out at nighttime and we beat up, you know, black teenagers. Mm-hmm. And guys would come in, make that confession, right? So it's now on the public record that these dastardly racist things happened during apartheid, you know, name, date, you know, it happened, right? And then the victims' families would be in the room listening to these confessions, right? And the idea was kind of like, I guess, Freud on the, you know, when you go in, talk to the shrink, if you get it out in the open and you do an exposition of whatever it is that is destructive in your life or in society, the idea is if you get it out there and it's now being discussed, maybe that will lower the temperature of people seeking violence.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was what Desmond Tutu was trying to do with apartheid. And perhaps those kinds of hearings should be had in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
Because there may very well be teenage people who feel oppressed. One of the very first things that they're now going to vote on in City of Cincinnati, the council. I mean, this is a classic knee-jerk reaction. They now want to impose a citywide curfew on young people. Okay, so you're going to punish everybody, right? So now, guys, you know, say the curfew's 11 o'clock. So me and my buddies want to go play basketball at midnight, right? Peacefully playing basketball in the neighborhood, right? Because we're 16 years old. Our hormones are going wild. We have all this energy to burn off. And now the city council is going to say, hey, you know what, guys? You got to go back in your house at 11 or we're going to arrest you for violating the curfew.
Yeah.
So like it just amps up things. And I'm like, you know, curfew bottles up the problem. It covers it over with like this duct tape, and underneath it is this seething rage, because now you are taking the good kids and you're punishing them like preemptively for what bad kids do.
And taking away one more liberty that they feel like they have very few liberties anyway.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's a crazy reaction to this.
It is.
Because these were adults that did this.
Right.
In those videos, I didn't see any 16-year-old kids.
No.
It was full-grown people.
Yeah, they were full-grown, yes.
Like, exactly. Should have known better.
I was just going to say that should have known better.
And now we're going to do a curfew on children. Whatever. It just seems to me
it's like one of those, well, we got to do something.
Yeah, there should be a lot more dialogue here.
Yeah.
You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see black churches and white churches, mm-hmm. because that's where good-hearted people generally go. They go to church, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of race, right? Mm-hmm. Those pastors of different, maybe those communities are integrated, and maybe some are mainly black or mainly white. But I'd like to see some of those churches do outreach, ecumenical outreach to other churches, and say, you know what? Mm-hmm. We want your people to come to our service, and then afterwards we're going to have donuts and coffee. Where we have a panel and people can talk about these issues.
Yeah,
I think that would be one step that, frankly, the people need to be in the leadership of this, because I don't think politicians are going to solve this.
No, because
it's got to come from
it's the shiny object right now, and then the next problem comes about 30 days later, and then this gets put on the shelf.
Yeah, right,
because they don't live there.
Well, and they're looking for
in that community, right?
They're looking for quick and dirty, like let's do a curfew, and then we can say, okay, we did something,
because this problem is 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 years in the making.
It's generational.
It is generational, right. So it's not going to be and it may take a few years to figure this out.
Right.
Yeah, you got to be patient with it, but you got to start. Start somewhere.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's hit your next.
I thought another one of these bubblegum stories that has kind of turned ugly is this Sydney Sweeney thing. So American Eagle hires this beautiful model, and I guess she was in that 6-year episode thing called The Handmaid's Tale. And, you know, that's been turned into like a cautionary tale about, you know, cutting off abortion rights. So I think people's perception was that this actress who was in this series mm-hmm. called The Handmaid's Tale was a fellow Hollywood liberal. It turns out she is a Second Amendment gun-toting registered Republican from the state of Florida. And so suddenly this campaign, when she was outed, so to speak, as a conservative. And I don't know how conservative she is, but the idea that she's at least a registered Republican has somehow made her an outcast. And I would just say, hey, come on, people. I mean, you've got Ron Howard and you've got a million Hollywood liberals, you know, Robert De Niro, just tons, right, that are all giving that side plenty of airtime. And you've got this, whatever she is, 26-year-old, 24-year, whatever she is, mm-hmm. Young girl, young lady, she can be whatever she wants to be. I'm not one of these people that wants, Rosie O'Donnell to go to Ireland. Like, I'm not one of these people that says, oh, if you don't like America, leave it. You know, I'm not one of those people. And I wouldn't say that to a liberal wants to criticize conservatives. And I think the flip side's got to be true, too. This, where they have made a mountain out of a molehill here. And this lady, I think yesterday, Sydney Sweeney, got booed or jeered at some thing. But American Eagle stock went up 25%. Yeah. Like in one day over this.
Yeah.
So...
It feels, if you take a step back and you look at this and you kind of look at what's going on, I almost look like, to me, it's almost, you're being played, America. You're being played.
Oh my God.
Because they just want to continue to divide you. You look at something, look at someone,
right.
And all of a sudden it's like, he is this or she is that.
Right.
And it's like, well, you got to put them in that barrel.
Pigeonhole them.
And it's just the continual division.
Exactly.
And again, this is not anything but just observation of let it be. Let it be what it is. God. Does it matter? Right. I mean, your favorite actors and actresses, and we'll stay in that Hollywood realm. Does it matter what they believe in?
Right.
To me, I love Harrison Ford because Harrison Ford is great on screen.
He's a good actor.
I could care less if the man is liberal, conservative, whatever.
Right.
I don't want a microphone put in his face to ask him his point of view. I really don't want to hear points of view from Hollywood elite.
They're largely uneducated.
I don't want to hear it. I want them to just do their job as anyone else. Now, if they have a political show, a podcast, or whatever.
Or if they jump into politics, fine.
Right.
You know, like
that's
Ronald
Reagan.
Totally
different story.
Ronald Reagan went from, Hollywood and became the governor of California, then the president. So that's different.
Right.
Right.
Schwarzenegger's in that same vein.
Exactly.
You know, those that are jumping and going into politics or, you know, running for an office, that's a totally different story. Then, we need to hear what they're thinking, what they're saying, and what they're going to bring to the office if they get elected in that office. But beyond that, it just.
Why would you? And I feel the same way about sports figures.
Yeah.
Like the last person I would go to, and it's not because. It's not because they are a baseball player or they are a Hollywood actor, but if I want to educate, let's say, my kids about anything serious, right? I wouldn't say, well, you know, Pete Rose always said, right?
Right.
So, but now if my kid wants to play baseball and I go, hey, you can't be lazy when you run the bases.
Right.
Like if you do a pop-up foul, You know, the guy could drop it. So run your ass off to first base like Pete Rose.
Like Pete Rose would say.
Duh.
Exactly.
But I wouldn't say, listen, when you get married, a good example of a married man would be Pete Rose, right? I wouldn't say that. Or, you know, whatever it is. Like, I wouldn't say, you know, the same about Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, you know, if you're going to have a maid in the house, you know, you should behave like a real gentleman like Arnold Schwarzenegger did. I wouldn't. That's not who I would go to as an example. And I don't know why we do that with pop culture figures.
And that's ridiculous.
That's
been in the making for decades, generations.
Yes.
Obviously, it really has been.
Go back to Clark Gable. They were W.C. Fields or, you know, any of those guys.
Right.
Arbuckle.
We all want to have those touch points that I'm similar to she or similar to he because I get them now sort of thing. It's like, just do your job.
Yeah. And a lot of times, so these guys, these late night comics that are losing their jobs because their shows aren't funny anymore. You know, like you went from Jay Leno, and Johnny Carson, who were genuinely like down the middle, funny. They would take a shot at a Republican or a Democrat. Basically, they were just doing light humor, like, you know, saying something funny about Nixon or Reagan or Bill Clinton or whatever. And then this latest crowd, Kimmel and Colbert, dude, you know, you just turn it on and it's an hour of just diatribe. And I wouldn't want to hear that about a Democrat or a Republican. It's just, to me, it's boring. It's not funny. And I think that's why they're going off the air at this point.
Yeah.
Because
They're definitely turned the political news into comedy. So, you know, they're spoon feeding the political news that we don't seem to want to sit through and really listen to the hard stuff. But it's just that spoon feed me, make me laugh. Spoon feed me, make me laugh. It's working to a certain degree. There is an audience for it, whether it's growing or not. You look at the ratings. I don't know, but you know,
Paramount has decided it's not a big enough audience.
Apparently, yeah. Well, and there's some economics behind it too. What he has a staff of over 100 people. I don't know what the number was, but it's like, holy cow. Yeah. It's like, how many people do you need to make this show work? It's like, okay.
40 million a year or something.
Two. Yeah.
And
that's a lot of advertising.
It's just, we got to find somebody like that just a straight up, like, you're laughing all night and then getting more viewers.
Yeah.
Because I think more and more people, for me, sports, to just take that as an example. For me, sports has always been like a safe place, if you want to look at it that way, or just a place where I can relax.
A diversion.
A diversion.
From real world.
From politics.
Yeah.
Like you walk in, you see a good baseball game. Nobody's telling you who to vote for, you know.
For three hours. Yeah, yeah, right. Exactly.
And nobody's telling you what laws need to be passed.
Yeah.
You can just eat popcorn, have a beer, you know, and focus on a wonderful American tradition. And I think in Europe, that's probably the same as true of soccer.
Yeah.
You know, people can go to a place and just enjoy a game and for the pure sport of it.
Yeah, I can imagine there's probably a correlation if someone were to do a study, and it's probably out there, everybody studies everything, that the more intense politics and real life becomes, the more sports viewership is up.
Yeah.
Because of the diversion.
Yeah. And I think a lot of
escapism. I can imagine.
So there was an item in the news this week. Some guy got kicked out of a soccer match, I think, in St. Louis. He went to a football, you know, they call soccer football. He went to a football league, football club, FC St. Louis or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, the guy's a season ticket holder. And the rule is, in that stadium, that you can't wear political shirts and hats. So he goes in with a MAGA hat, right? And the police and the, you know, the policeman came up and said, hey, I'm a Trumper too, but you got to take that hat off or you need to leave, because it's just a rule of the dress code here is like, you know, we don't want to see Antifa shirts and we don't want to see MAGA shirts. We, you know, that's just the rule here. And, you know, so he was forced to leave because he wouldn't take the hat off. And on his way out, he pointed, and I think this is interesting, that there was a section of the stadium that was Rainbow Coalition. And he said, well, now those people are up there advocating their politics. And I'm like, okay, the guy's got a point.
He does.
But at the same time, the overall argument would be, you know, and this is where that the soccer team will probably start to analyze their own rules. Then nobody, like, if you're gonna tell people they can't come in and talk about their politics at a sporting event, then it needs to be across the board. And the guy with a MAGA hat should not be wearing it. And the coalition that, you know, says that this and that is a crisis, they shouldn't be pushing their politics either.
Yeah, and you know, the Rainbow Coalition as well too. You don't know that a percentage of them, you don't know their political leanings. Where a MAGA hat kind of does tell you.
Well,
to a certain degree. I mean,
I think the Rainbow Coalition has a political agenda.
They
but,
do, but I'm just saying.
But I don't want to argue about that.
No. But your point is well taken. You're right. Exactly. It's one of those, like, it's going to be across the board.
Like if the Republican club wanted to go to the baseball game, they can go as a club.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
But
yeah.
Hanging a banner that says vote Republican in the grandstands is probably...
Well, and
not
back,
what they're looking
back
for.
To your original point, we go to these games because we want to escape
this
stuff.
Get away from it.
We don't want it. Just you know, give me 3 hours, please.
That's all.
That's it. You know.
So
I think that's why, you know, the announcers of games are so good, because they're in the game. You want to listen to what? Yeah, there's a lot to that.
And when they go off mic and start saying crazy stuff, then the announcers lose their job.
Yeah, right.
Like that young Brenneman guy.
Yeah, because your point of view does not represent those of your employer, the Cincinnati Reds, or you know, or at least whoever was employing at the point in time, which would have been the Reds at that time. Yeah, exactly.
He lost his gig.
Yeah.
Because he's saying stuff off mic that, you know, is political, and they're like, you know, we can't have that.
Yeah.
That's not your job.
No, it's not. And no one wants to hear it. Do your own show if that's what you want to talk about it. Yeah, right. Oh, for sure. Exactly.
Well, you know, another big thing that's going on right now, kind of nationally, and this is where I would say it's a pox on both sides. So that's redistricting, okay, or what they call gerrymandering, right? So when you're in political power in a state, like New York, California, Illinois, Massachusetts, are very strong Democrat households, power bases. Mm-hmm. In Massachusetts, for example, there is not a single state representative who is a Republican. And that's, Okay, they've gerrymandered the hell out of California and New York. And so when I hear Kathy Hochul get on TV and complain about what Greg Abbott's doing in Texas or what the Republicans in Ohio are about to do with redistricting, hey, guys, you know, people in glass houses shouldn't be throwing rocks. And it's a fact of life that if you control your state government, you then control the redistricting process. And you, without violating certain Supreme Court decisions about disenfranchising whole groups of population, there are some rules that you have to follow state by state. And Ohio has rules about the limits of, like you couldn't draw a district that's 400 feet wide and 100 miles long. That would be like just for the farmers in West Ohio along the Indiana border. You can't contrive a district that's so bizarre and lacks any kind of continuity or integrity. But hey, if you control Ohio, whether it's Democrat or Ohio or Republican, you can then gerrymander. And that's just the way the system works. Yeah. It's like Barack Obama told John McCain, John, elections have consequences. And so if you elect a Republican Senate, a Republican House, and a Republican governor, and a Republican Supreme Court, hey, Ohio, you're going to get gerrymandered.
Yeah.
And that's what is true in California. That's what's true in New York. Mm-hmm. But in those states, it's the other party doing it. So I would just say, Republicans, you can't complain about what they do in Democrat states. And Democrats, you can't complain about what they're doing in Texas or Ohio. It's just the way it is. And if you want to control the redistricting process, politically, then you've got to win those states.
Right.
Get
your message on point.
That's how it works.
And get your people elected. That's the answer to everything you want
changed. That's the answer to everything.
Everything.
For God's sake.
Everything. And whether you like the gerrymandering or not, I'm not a big fan of it either. But at the same time, as you mentioned, Norm, both parties take advantage of the situations.
And then they call the other party crooked.
Right.
Republicans will call the New York Democrats crooked or the Illinois Democrats crooked. And then they're doing that right now to Greg Abbott and to Ohio Republicans. And it's just like, guys, that's BS. What you're saying is you're doing this in your state, but somehow you shouldn't do it, in a Republican state.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying, listen, you're going to lose that argument. We have bigger issues. There's other things to do than worrying about redistricting. So
yeah, quite frankly, we already talked about a few.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Could we?
Good grief. Yeah.
Maybe pay down the federal deficit.
Yeah, maybe.
Something.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So did you have any other hot topics you wanted to cover?
Well, I think in Ohio, another hot topic is the lack of action by, and again, I described Ohio as being pretty much run by Republicans. So we can lay this at the feet of the Republican Party and the Republican lawmakers. And that is the lack of progress on property tax reform. And our Democrat friend, Bill DeMora, wrote a column, very partisan column, but I read that column word for word, and he's got some good ideas in that article. One of which, a couple of them. One is to double the homestead exemption for older Ohioans. So I looked into this just curious. When I get to that age where I qualify for a homestead exemption, what would it save me out of my, I think now I'm paying almost $10,000 a year. And it's double the amount that I used to pay just 3 years ago. So my property taxes have doubled. There are Ohioans whose property taxes have quintupled, have gone up 500%. And my homestead exemption, after the auditor and I on the phone crunched the numbers, currently would save me maybe $100, $150 a year, right? And so Bill is saying at least double that. And I couldn't agree more because of inflation, like if nothing else.
Right.
If your home value has doubled or quintupled, right, or quadrupled or whatever it's done, or sextupled or whatever it's done, right, then it seems to me that your exemption should likewise
follow it as well.
Yeah.
No. I think the homestead could very well be a great answer to a lot of these problems if aggressively looked at.
And another one
aggressively
he had,
looked at.
Now, Bill may have set this a little too low. I don't know. I mean, I would love it as a taxpayer, but he said, after a certain age, right, or after a certain income level. For example, let's suppose your household income, your wife, your domestic partner, you, your kids, you add everybody up that lives in the house and contributes to the household. And let's suppose it's $100,000 to just pick a round number. Mm-hmm. So Bill said, well, why not cap your property taxes at, say, 5% of the gross household income? So that for that household, the maximum that they would pay would be $5,000 property tax, to just give a raw example. Mm-hmm. So even if their home got reappraised at 5 or 10 times the amount that it used to be worth, but these people still make the same amount of money, like their income didn't go up, and now they're kind of trapped in this house because if they save it, what can they buy to replace that house in the same neighborhood if all the other houses went up? So they're trapped in that house if they want to stay in that community. But yet they can't pay their real estate taxes because they've gone up exponentially. So Bill's saying tie that, Representative DeMora saying tie that to their income. I kind of like that.
Yeah.
I mean, these are things, hey, Republicans, dudes, you've got these Democrats that want to help us cut taxes for property tax people that are getting basically taxed out of their homes, right? And they're having to sell homes under duress because they can't pay their property taxes. This should be bipartisan.
Yeah.
And Republicans, what you're looking at is this groundswell movement that will be on the ballot next year to eliminate all property taxes. And then we're well and truly effed in the state of Ohio, because that's how we finance fire departments and local police department and all kinds of, and schools, all kinds of local services are financed on the basis of local property taxes. And if a constitutional amendment is passed by voters next year, because they're hopping mad about how their taxes have gone up, and the legislature led by Republicans and a Republican governor have done nothing, Mike DeWine, you know, remember, he vetoed all those property tax reforms. If they've done nothing to assuage this problem and don't work with Democrats to come up with solutions pretty damn quick, I think that constitutional amendment may pass.
Right. I think.
And that's a disaster.
As a group, this should be priority one.
This is priority one.
Everything else, all this stupid little legislation here or there,
right,
that absolutely mean nothing.
About bathrooms and gender of athletes this candy. Like, okay, go, you pass those laws. Now do something meaningful.
Right.
Here.
And no poo-pooing ideas from across the aisle as well, too, because there are some really smart people on both sides.
Absolutely.
And yes, they bring some luggage with them. I get it. You may not agree with everything that Bill DeMora, Democrat, says, but guess what?
Maybe 75% you do agree with.
Sometimes this guy comes out with really great ideas, and you can say the other people on the other side of the aisle as well, too.
We keep talking about Bill. I hope we get him on the show sometime, because he and I will disagree about 95%, but the 5% we agree about is really important stuff like this.
Right. We've talked a lot about some great ideas that he's had
right.
that really have gone nowhere, but he's floating them out there, and he's a hardworking guy.
Right.
He really is. But
intellectual.
And I'm sure I wouldn't agree with everything he says too, but I don't agree with a lot of people on, with R's or D's. I don't. It's just, but we're allowed those opinions.
this is really a stain on Ohio. We are disgorging, and we've covered it on the show, hundreds of millions of dollars to billion-dollar corporations like Intel and Anduril, right? And with government, the state of Ohio picking winners and losers. And we know now Intel's a loser. And we lost all this money. And they're not building out there anymore. All the license plates from Georgia and Tennessee and Texas that I used to see every day, they're not there in Johnstown anymore. Those carpenters and concrete contract, all those guys, they went back home because they suspended a lot of the construction. And so there is like tens of millions of dollars that could have gone to property tax relief, or could have gone to schools, or could have gone to prison reform, or a bunch of other needs that we have in Ohio. And instead it went to this corporation, Intel, and it's all we did was piss away this money, yeah. This taxpayer money.
Yeah, I don't even
it's
know.
It's a crime.
I don't even know if Ohio can do this, but we need to. The legislators, Ohio legislators, need to be bringing somebody from Jobs Ohio and call them on the carpet about this.
No question.
As executive,
it's outrageous.
Just bring him, put him on mic and talk. What in the hell is going on here?
Right.
What happened here? That number one, is there any clawback that can happen, and when's that going to happen, if there's any? And next, it's one of those. Talking about transparency.
And Brett, what they did was the opposite. So they extended Jobs Ohio's secret exclusive contract with selling liquor in Ohio. They run the Ohio Department of Liquor Control, basically. They extended that to the year 2053. It was supposed to expire in like 2028. They extended it like another 25 years.
Well beyond our lifespan.
I mean,
quite frankly, they'll be around longer than we will.
Dude, it's crazy. It's crazy. And they cannot be audited. I mean,
that's crazy. You know, if we do a major liquor strike, that we don't drink liquor for the next 6 months, could we defund that?
I mean, honestly, let's all go to Kentucky to buy our bourbon or
exactly.
Something.
Exactly. Go to the next state, buy what you need.
It's inexplicable. And frankly, some of our think tanks keep we have friends at the Buckeye Institute, for example. We've had them on the show. And when you talk to the Chamber of Commerce or the Buckeye Institute or these bastions of conservatism, right? They seemingly won't touch Jobs Ohio. Like, it is somebody's baby politically, and it seems like nobody wants to poke that bear.
All right, we have to have
because we have to have
this edge over other states.
Yeah.
Guess what? We just took a poke in the eye with Intel.
No question.
Yeah, and hopefully this thing turns around, that something is built there, or it's going to be an eyesore. And if that remains a cement slab, somebody's head will roll on that one.
I hope somebody
needs to grab onto that. Politician needs to grab onto that and really win. You're going to have a 50-mile radius around that area on your side.
Yeah.
Because of all the destruction that happened, economic, physical, everything that went.
Families that were forced out.
Right.
Because, you know, they looked at a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to sell their house or their farm. And they're no longer even in the area. They mm-hmm. moved to Tennessee or whatever. And we're stuck with this smoking crater. You know, like, all of our property taxes have jacked up, you know, exponentially. The schools are in flux. They don't know whether they should be building, you know, new schools or just, like, wait and see. It's a calamity what's going on out there.
Well, it's also concerning too. Let's take it away, and I know we're getting close to the end of the show, but at the same time, let's take a look at we want to build infrastructure for these chips nationwide. We want to bring it back home.
Yeah, for national security reasons. We do need them not to be made in Taiwan, because Taiwan could get taken over any time.
So this is an example. How are we going to fix this problem?
Right.
Because if Intel stops construction because of something that's changed in the industry, so how the hell do we bring it back home?
Right.
So, my answer?
My answer is let the marketplace work.
Yeah.
Because when investors think it's a good bet to build chip factories in America because the Department of Defense is going to be buying these chips for AI or for missiles or for whatever else they're going to buy them for, when people know that there's money to be made, they will invest in Intel or NVIDIA or whatever. They'll invest in these companies. But for these companies to take public money, right, instead of getting investor money, then it doesn't make sense. And that's how you end up with Enron. That's how you end up with these companies that never end up in fruition, never really make anything, and just they're just, you know, like living off government funds until they go pop.
Yeah. And this is where I think DeWine is probably out of it now in regards to making any influence on that. I think Stivers is perfect for this in regards to jumping in and saying, yeah, you were there at the Golden Shovel.
Yeah.
Figure it out.
Right.
You know, you're now big dog.
Yeah, right.
So help out a brother. You know, help
I'd
out
like
a sister.
To hear Vivek talk about this a little bit too. Like he goes for the quick headline stuff, like, you know, a race riot in Cincinnati. Okay, that's, you know, that's candy.
Yes,
that's easy stuff that you can grab a headline. I haven't heard him talk about Jobs, Ohio.
Right.
You know, and I'd like to hear what he says about that, because I think we need some reforms.
Yeah, because if and when he becomes the next governor, it is not going to go away during his term.
No.
It's not.
No, they need to resend.
In fact, it may become more of a problem.
They need to resend this exclusive arrangement out to 2053, like number one. They need to withdraw that.
Yes.
And they need to demand terms in any future agreements and rewrite current ones, that this is an auditable entity at full transparency to the citizens of Ohio. You know, maybe during negotiations with a company, things can be closely held in certain areas.
Of course.
But when the ink is dry on the contract, we should know every damn thing about it.
Yep.
So
everything. Yeah. So you want to go with
winners
and losers?
So this week got to be shareholders, people in the stock market. So the S&P 500, the Dow, they have hit records. NASDAQ hit records this week. If you are still invested with your 401k and you looked at your portfolio, unless your 401k picks some really bad stocks, basically – everything went up dramatically this week.
Yeah.
Now, things go back down, and people are predicting a correction of 10% or whatever.
Yeah, cooling
later
off
on.
In the next couple of months.
The next couple of whatever. And there probably will be. I mean, there definitely will be a correction. Probably 10%, you know, and then it'll cycle back up again. Mm-hmm. My losers this week would be borrowers. So this is where I have to say, I think that the Fed needs to, so they didn't do a cut on the rate, but mortgage rates are around, for a 30-year fixed, are around like 7% right now. And that's just too much.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that long ago, maybe 4 or 5 years ago, that rates were like 2%. So I saw where, what was it? Money Magazine or one of the pop business titles that you can buy at the Barnes & Noble or wherever you get your magazines, they did a story that said even at 0%, if you went to a bank and got a 0% interest mortgage for 30 years, homes are still unaffordable for the Gen Zers or Gen Xers or Gen whatever they are, that these young people... there was a chart that came out this week that tracked from 1958 to the present, okay? People who are 30 years old and are homeowners. And it went from 1958, 50% of the people who were 30 were also homeowners. Guess what it is in 2025? It's 7%.
I'm going to guess 10.
Wow. 7% of the people who are 30 are married with a house versus 50%, you know, 75 years ago.
Wow.
And
wow.
That, hey, that is a cultural shift that we are grappling with, you know, whether it's marriage, whether it's where people think, like, do I even have the American dream accessible to me? 7%. So what is their stake? When you only have 7% of 30-year-olds who are married with a house, what is their stake in a neighborhood to make it a better neighborhood? If they think, well, it's only 7% of us, the rest of them are geezers or they're renters no real long-term stake in the neighborhood. So why should I plant a tree, mow my lawn, form a community watch group to keep crime down, or anything else that's positive?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We got a problem, folks.
Yeah.
With the middle class. It is shrinking.
It is, exactly. My winner this week, I had to think on this one, but it's like Trump deciding to put some dollars into a new ballroom at the White House. I'm thinking, yeah, why not? It's his own money. Apparently right now the ballroom at the White House holds maybe a capacity of 200. He's looking at, dumping money, his money, along with other people that may invest in up to 600, something like that. It's like, okay, yeah, if that 200 does sound like a small ballroom, quite frankly.
Yeah, if you want to do a state dinner. Yeah,
and if it's not our money, okay, go for it.
Yeah.
Honestly, whatever. He needs to stop climbing on the White House roof, though, and get doing some work.
I'm sure there's some people would like him to topple.
Yeah, you need to stop
well,
doing
we
that.
We don't want any harm
frankly.
To come to the press.
Yeah, exactly. And a loss, I just saw this today, that apparently we're going to put a nuclear reactor on the moon. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy is going to announce an expedited plan this week to build a nuclear reactor on the moon.
Oh, he's temporary head of NASA, too.
Exactly. He's getting his toehold into that. So it looks like we're going to try to go to the moon again, and we got some power up there. We got energy problems here, quite frankly.
Build some nuke plants here that are safe and small?
To me, I'm kind of concerned. It's like, we don't need to be blowing up the moon by accident. It's not going to happen. You know what I mean?
Don't go all Godzilla on me here.
That's tongue in cheek. But it's like, but we got energy problems here, folks. We have to really worry about nuclearizing the moon, quite frankly. I don't know. Anyway, so whatever it just seemed like an oddball kind of like, what?
Yeah, I didn't really dig into that story. Yeah.
Can we do solar power?
But I think
because the sun does shine on the moon.
Well, I think what that portends. So you got to ask yourself, why would you need lots of power on the moon? It's not just to put people up there on vacation. No. I think there is going to be economic exploitation of minerals. Coming out of the moon's surface mining into the moon. I don't know what is there. I'm not a student of interplanetary.
Cheese has been off the list for a while. So we know there's not moon cheese.
I know that they're mining deep sea for iron nodes and all kinds of stuff that apparently is on the seabed or below the surface of the seabed here on Earth. And apparently there must be something valuable that they're going to try to extract from the moon. And as Brett says, it ain't cheese.
No, it's not. No, exactly.
There's something there.
Or they want to try to explore it somehow. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so if you know more, let us know. We just bring the news. We sometimes don't have enough time to really dig deep. And sometimes the news isn't allowing us to dig deep because it's not there, quite frankly. Right. So thanks for joining us again. If you do like what we said, if you don't like what we said, please leave us comments. We want to hear feedback. Or topics that you'd like us to cover, please do. Steve is not with us, but, again, we cover a lot of legal stuff with him. Throw some legal stuff at us, that sort of thing. We'll get Steve's input, whether it's pre-recorded or recorded, depends on what his court date schedule is. And also be sure to thank Harper Plus CPA accountants. They sponsor the Common Sense Ohio. I'd love to have them on board. And Glenn's been on the show quite a few times talking about accounting stuff and helping your business grow the best way you want it to grow with their help. And they're great people, honestly. Until next week, we will see you then.
Are you an entrepreneur who doesn't know when to pick up the phone or get out the keyboard to contact your CPA?
A lot of people are like that. And one of those things that you have to figure out when is the right time to do that is when you feel like you don't know what's going on. How much money am I making? How do I pay my taxes? I'm running my business out of my checkbook and I have no clue what's going on. I don't know if my employees are making me money. I don't know if my products are making money. I don't know which way I'm going. I'm upside down. I can't concentrate or can't think about anything other than where the heck am I, instead of thinking, how do I grow and continue on my business? That's when you should call.
So if you're an entrepreneur and you're looking to have a tax question in regards to that, drop it in the comments and we'll try to get back to you.